Joined here today by John Livingston, Chief Executive of Acom Capital. John, thank you so much for joining us here
today. Thanks for having
me. John, you've lived and breathed plenty of development projects and real estate cycles over your career. You're Chief Executive of the investment arm of Acom, former President of Tishman Construction Corporation. I'm really keen to get a sense, as you look to invest as a co-GP in development projects across the US, as to how you view the risks within the commercial real estate market today, and particularly in the development cycle. First and foremost, though, just give me an idea as to what's your strategy today?
Our strategy is to invest in gateway cities across the U.S. where Tishman, where their subsidiary Hunt Construction has a presence. So that means Boston to Miami, Chicago, San Diego to Seattle, Texas, and Denver. Gateway cities because you buy in at a higher price, but there's more growth and not secondary and tertiary cities. We look across asset classes. Today it's mostly multifamily, some condo. We're not afraid of hotels. And we think generally New York, San Francisco, maybe in the fifth inning, but I think the other cities are probably in the third inning. So I think we're smack dab in the development cycle. But having said that, when I was a young man, cycles were 10 to 15 years. They're now 5 to 7 years.
Much, much shorter cycles.
Much, much shorter because of the transparency in the marketplace. Things move so much quicker because of the internet.
And how many projects have you actually done to date for Acom?
We started Acom Capital in January of 2013. We've committed to 14 projects. And it totals about $3 billion in development.
So where do you see kind of the development cycle? I do get a sense from you that, you know, perhaps it's more, perhaps slight pockets of overdevelopment. You're actually not too much concerned about, you know, a general oversupply in the market.
You know, historically, you make money in real estate by holding on. If you're a small company and times get bad or there's a recession, you give the keys back. If you're a stronger, more financially based company, you can hold on during the downturn. So my view is kind of old school. You invest and develop good locations with good partners and good real estate projects and hope that they're great one day and in good cities. And there's nothing more than that. There's always a question of oversupply, but you have to take a longer-term view. It's the bankers of the world that told us we have to take a short-term view, but that isn't really the case in real estate. It's really a longer-term view.
If the development cycle is so much shorter today, how does that kind of impact your view of the market as we currently look?
It depends on the location. And as I said, in New York and San Francisco, which are the two hottest markets in the country, you know, land prices are peaking, and it's beyond what you can imagine where they ever were in my lifetime. And we know the cost of construction generally. We know the financing rates generally. We know the market rates generally. The only real variable is land. And so you can't overpay for land for development. So I look in those markets in improving locations, transforming neighborhoods where the land price is still reasonable. And then you build for the long haul. You just have to accept the cycles.
Because I know, obviously, two big projects that you're doing at the minute. One is in Flushing Commons in Queens, right, in New York. I mean, this is a 5-acre, $1 billion multifamily project. Right. Just talk me through that and kind of what were some of the drivers behind that?
You know, that project was a parcel of land, a garage that was owned by the city of New York. And they put it out to RFP 3 times in the last 25 years. And finally, as these folks won it about 10 years ago, we came along a couple years ago and bought into it. But that's a project that will transform that neighborhood. It's a $1.2 billion project. It's about 1 million square feet overall, I think. We're only doing the first phase, which is 150 apartments and 75 office condos and some retail and parking. But I like the idea of being in a neighborhood that's transforming. What people don't know about Flushing, and maybe some do, is it's the greatest density of Chinese and Koreans in New York and probably in the country. It's the third busiest subway stop as well. So people want to be there, and it's the first stop for many Asians who come from overseas. So we think, and you can buy a condo there for one-half to one-third of the price of Manhattan.
So have you seen that slight overdevelopment in terms of multifamily? Because obviously multifamily is, when we talk about potential oversupply, potential overdevelopment, multifamily is always the property type that's kind of picked up first. Are you beginning to see that real growth in kind of development projects, you know, in multifamily kind of across New York?
Well, New York, the thing is every piece of land is priced for condo, not for rental. People would love to build rental. There's an enormous demand because rental occupancy is probably 99.5% or something, and rental rates have gone through the roof. But you can't afford to buy the land. It doesn't support rental. The new normal is $800 to $1,000 a buildable square foot. So you've got to sell condos for $3,000 or more to make it work. So you can forget rental in New York, in my opinion, unless you've owned the land for 100 years and it's really cheap and you want to do rental. Other markets, land is much cheaper. We bought 6 acres of land in downtown Los Angeles. at $45,000 a door. It's now valued at twice that. So we got in at the right time.
This is one that you're actually doing with Mack Real Estate and Capri
Capital. That's right. There's five separate sites, 6 acres, three or four blocks from the Staples Arena. And it's going to hold about 1,400 rental apartment units and a 200-unit hotel. But as I said, five separate sites. And the first one is a 362-unit stick-built project with Capri, and Mac is the lead developer.
And just talk to me about some of the risks that you're willing to take. You're willing to take some entitlement risks. How much?
You know, we come in as a co-GP. We are not the day-to-day developer. We're, as I say, the developer's driving the bus. I'm riding shotgun. We're a sidecar. We will come in early and take GMP risk because our construction company, Tishman, will build it. So I'm familiar with that, and we'll take that kind of risk. And we'll take some entitlement risk. We won't take the five-year kind. I'm kind of too old. You know, we'll take the 12-month entitlement risk that mostly is administrative. I've got to see an end to the process. And typically there's gold at the end of the rainbow, but some developers spend 5 to 10 years doing these things. We bought a piece of land in L.A. and on Sunset Boulevard. The developer, the operating partner, bought it 8 years ago and spent 6 years entitling it painfully. We came in 2 years ago and bought half the property with him. I mean, so we got the benefit of all of his hard work. I don't have the resources to go through a painful six-year process and a very expensive process.
Where do you see us in this cycle? Because I'd love to point out, you know, your career, 35 years, you've built some fantastic projects, One World Trade Center, Javits Center, you've done the restoration of New York Plaza, the city center in Vegas, 18 million square foot. There's been some major projects that you've been involved in. What are the key lessons you've learned and kind of where are we today?
A lot of very smart people have built into the wrong market, that's for sure, and there's been problems. So there's no answer to all this. Like I said earlier, in a perfect world, you want to build into a down market. You just don't want to believe your own stuff. You want to make sure you've done your homework and that you've checked what's in the ground. You've done everything you're supposed to do to build properly. I, as I said, I think that New York and San Francisco are probably past the halfway mark. I think other major cities, L.A., Chicago, Boston, D.C., Denver, Dallas, whatever, are on this side of the 50-yard line. I think there's still some real runway with those other cities. I think here it's going to be tough to build something in San Francisco to make sense. And what people are banking on is the next wave of investors. So now it's the Asians. You know, it was the Japanese before that. It was the Germans. It was the Brazilians. It was the Russians. I mean, every 5 or 10 years, it's a new group from overseas that bails people out. So right now it's the Asians are here and the Chinese in a very big way. I always say, I teach, and I always say that at a 4% cap rate and 4% debt rate, you know, most everything works. 20 years ago, I would never have developed if the return on cost was 6%. But that's what it is today. As long as you have 150 basis point spread between what you can build it for, what you can sell it for, you can get financing in the right markets.
You mentioned, obviously, the fact that, you know, real estate, particularly development cycles, are obviously shorter, owing to the transparency and data that we have in the industry. One interesting comment that Bill Wheaton made at a talk recently was, you know, given that transparency, given that data, have we actually tamed development cycles?
That would be lovely. You know, if that was the case, we could hire junior people to do everything. I don't think so at all. I think what we have, though, is tremendous transparency in the marketplace and tremendous data. But, you know, developers take risk, and some are contrarians, and some say, you can show me that there's 10,000 units coming online in downtown L.A., but I still think there's a wider market, and I build longer term. So I don't think development is a science. I think it's an art.